I'm digging the new intro with the little beat switch up. It's like we're at a rave. Welcome back to the Pesky Report, episode 328, brought to you by Beyond the Monster. I'm Jordan Leandri, joined as always by Matt. And also joining us for the first time is at Red Sox Caitlin, KB.
You didn't want to do Matt's idea.
Matt's idea.
I think you should have been like, yo, we got with us K to the second letter, a.k.a. K Bizzle, a.k.a. KB.
How you doing, KB?
We are good. I'm happy to be here.
Nice. Matt, how you doing tonight, man?
Well, definitely could be better, but as the kids say these days, I'm thriving. So
you're driving. Nice. Love to hear that. Well, we do have baseball back, like actual games, which is nice. The last time we recorded, they had just played Northeastern. So they've actually, we got the first thumbs up of the episode. They finally have played games in the actual Grapefruit League schedule. They are 4-2-1. That's correct. Yeah. 4-2-1 in the Grapefruit League after losing this afternoon, Friday, March 1st. To the Minnesota Twins, 5-3. Lucas Giolito got lost a little bit of his command late in his outing. He went 2 1/3 innings. Velocity was up. Everything else was not. But, you know, it is what it is. Matt, I'm sure you've watched more closely than I have been able to, because finding games is difficult when you're working. I mean, I know you work too, obviously, but I feel like you've have an easier way of finding games than I do. I'm an absolute shitter when it comes to that. But what are your
so far? Well, you know, I love giving John Henry my money. So I just pay for that Nesson Plus subscription. So, you know, got it on demand, baby. It's been crazy how quickly my mood changed, like when the Northeastern game played last Friday, and it was just like they started playing and I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. It's back. You know, and like freaking Roman Anthony's in the lineup, and I see the lineup tweet come through my phone the first time. I'm like, oh yes, let's go. You know, it was obviously Roman Anthony didn't play until Saturday, but still same vibe, and it felt really good. And I think it's really easy to get excited about things that you see in the games. It's easy to overreact about other things that you see. And it's kind of funny because we want to like accept that the good is like here to stay. And anything good you see in these games is like for sure how it's going to be all year. And then anything bad, you're like, oh, never making the team, trash, like get them off the this is going to be so concerning. And the arguments for both is like, you can't trust anything good and you can't trust anything bad. So really, it's like, why are they even doing it? But at the same time, I'm excited. It's been great to see the games. Do we want to go into them a little bit more in depth, or KB, did you get a chance to watch any of the games?
I have watched zero games. It's really sad, actually. It's so hard even watching Celtics games since I'm in New York right now for like school. It's impossible to find. I was trying to find it earlier, couldn't find it. So I live vicariously through the MLB app that sends me updates on my phone.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, today the game was only on AM radio because obviously this is 2024 and we live in the day
I'm
and age
dialing
of,
in.
Yes. Neither team decided that we wanted to broadcast this game, apparently. That's been the weirdest thing this week was the Monday game, Tuesday game, and today's game have all been on AM radio exclusively. They couldn't even kick off WEEI's regular scheduled hosts to have the game on. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's weird to me. KB texted me today and was like, I don't remember what exactly you said, but you're like, I'm gonna sign up for a free trial of Fubo, free advertising for Fubo. And I was like, okay. And then she was like, oh wait, game's not on TV today. And I'm like, oh, that's right. Like I could have saved you from doing that, but I completely forgot until you texted me that wasn't even on TV today. So it's been tough.
It was tragic.
It's been tough to be able to kind of keep track because my work schedule is like right in the heart of you know, when all the MLB guys are actually in the lineup. I've only been able to watch closely on the weekends, but you know, from what I've seen, like to Matt's point, there is so much delusion that comes in when spring training starts. It's like, even as how terrible the offseason was, and like, I know some good things happened, obviously, with like the hirings of like Andrew Bailey and a lot of the guys in and around the organization from a pitching development standpoint. But like, everyone's so down about the team. And then the second they get into game action after, you know, they finally took the lead from Northeastern last Friday, I'm like, what if this seems good, man? Like, what if they're good? Like, Mark Contreras hit a home run. Didn't know who he was, but he hit a home run. So it was like, cool. Then he hit another one against an MLB team. I'm like, yo, this guy's a demigod. Like, you know, there's a little bit of delusion that comes in when spring training actually begins. And it's nice because once we get to like the middle of May and this team is, you know, 7 games under .500, then, you know, we'll have to reflect on the good old days of Romy Gonzalez hitting garbage time homers in spring training. But I mean, I love spring training. Wish it was shorter because, you know, I feel like we get a lot of, I mean, obviously getting to see Roman Anthony play is nice and Nick York gets to play and Kyle Teal gets into game action, but I want to see the regulars more. Like, I don't want to see, you know, Bobby Dalbec and Pablo Reyes hitting cleanup and five in the lineup. You know, I want to see Yoshida. I want to see Story. I want to see, I mean, we'll get into the injury updates later. Duran finally debuted this afternoon. But like, I want to see the regulars more. And I'm being super impatient. It's March 1st. Season's going to start for like another month, but I'm just itching to see those guys. I want to see what the lineup looks like when all of these guys are in it, you know?
Well, first off, we will have no slander of our king, Pablo Reyes, on this podcast.
It's so, not slander. I just want him hitting like
eighth. I thought you were going to say Bobby.
I just want him hitting like eighth. Like, you know, I don't want him hitting fifth.
Yeah. He's our right-handed hitting power bat if all goes according to plan, Pablo Reyes.
And our backup first baseman.
He can play everywhere. I mean, honestly, he can even pitch. Right? He pitched a scoreless inning last season. So
he had a better ERA last year than Chris Murphy, I'm pretty sure.
So that was my highlight of the season. Pablo Reyes grand slam pitched a hitless inning.
Yeah.
Did Ohtani do that last year? Too. I don't think Ohtani did that last year. I don't think he hit a grand slam and pitched a scoreless inning on back-to-back days.
No, he didn't. So, I mean, obviously, we're not paying $700 million deferred on Pablo. We're definitely saving money. I don't even know if we're paying $700,000, honestly.
Yeah, dude, we got Shohei Ohtani at home. You know, it's great.
Where's the media coverage on that?
Yeah, right? Why isn't the media popping?
One of the best moments of the first game that was televised, I think it was the first game against Northeastern when they were interviewing who was it? The only person from the 40-man roster who played. It was
David Hamilton, maybe?
Yeah. The only person from the 40-man to play against Northeastern. And they were interviewing, Jemai was interviewing him in the dugout, and Pablo like sits down in his chair, just like right in the camera angle. And Jemai goes, "Oh, hey, what's up, Pablo?" And Pablo's like, no TV time today. he just shuts it right down. And they just were laughing because his face was literally so squarely in the shot the entire time. But he's like, "No, I'm not doing any TV." But then the very next day, they dragged him down there and made him do a full interview. So he's a funny guy. What can I say?
I love Pablo, and like budding bromance between him and Tristan Casas is also just beautiful. Like the video that was on talking about like, "Oh, you got a face that I can't forget." And it's, and Pablo's like, "I know, I'm very cute." And it's just, they're going back and forth. And it's like people talked this offseason about how like the vibes are going to be so terrible because everyone feels so betrayed by the front office and ownership for not investing. But like, these guys do seem to really like each other. Tyler O'Neill seems to be well liked so far. I know his reputation in St. Louis was kind of sour, kind of like Verdugo's eventually became here, but the team seems to all like each other, which is nice. We'll get into a little bit of, you know, some of the veteran comments that have come out, you know, over the last, you know, week or so at some point during this episode. But, you know, we'll move on from the game. I mean, I guess before we do, do you have any reactions on like anything you've seen so far from games, like what looks good, what looks concerning? I mean, it's been 8 games or 7 games so far, so maybe nothing crazy, but any first impressions on the guys that you've seen?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing that stands out, and this is probably the most obvious because there's actually been video clips kind of circulating of this, but Rafi has hit two opposite field tanks, which is really great. It looks like hitting opposite field has been something that's been a huge focus for him so far this offseason. It's obviously a really small sample size, but I remember, I can't remember seeing the exact statistics, so I'm just going to kind of not throw out a guess and be wildly wrong, but it was a long time before he actually hit his first opposite field home run last year. I don't remember exactly how many games it was, but I want to say something like in the ballpark of like 80 games before he hit his first opposite field home run. And he's already doing two of them here in spring training. So that was the first takeaway that I had, which looked really good. You guys get a chance to see the video clip of Rafi's homer from, or the first one that he hit almost over the monster.
I did get to see that. I watched the first one happen live, and that's always, it's always encouraging when you see Rafi going the other way. And I can't find exactly when he hit his first one, but last year he hit 7 home runs the other way. But when he goes the other way for his career, and I'm looking at it right now, he's gone the other way 658 times, or sorry, 652 times in his career. 652 at bats the other way, so not counting sac flies. He's a 410 hitter with a 198 WRC plus when he goes to left field. That's not even just at Fenway. So when he goes the other way, he is like Juan Soto, 2022 Aaron Judge, Barry Bonds level hitter when he hits the ball to left field. So him going that way is huge. And to do it a second day, so it's not like it's a fluke, it's starting to seem like a point of emphasis for him. If he could stay back on those high and outside pitches, a lot of the pitches he's been whiffing on over the last few years, and actually start driving them to left center for home runs, he's going to become a very difficult guy to pitch to. And he already is, but because he doesn't strike out a ton and he can hit anything. But if he's actually driving that pitch with authority, like, where do you throw him the ball and like not expect him to smoke it? You know, like him going the other way is gigantic. That's been a huge green flag, I guess, to say, of the opening part of spring training for me as well.
Yeah, I think that was probably the first thing that I think probably has a huge impact from day one for us. I remember watching last year, it was pretty consistent that I felt Rafi was whiffing on fastballs up. And if he can take the fastball up and drive it away, he can be a little bit late on it and it's okay, because he's just going to actually take that, can sit on it a little bit longer to kind of get his bearing and then just drive it to the opposite field and hit some absolute moonshots if he's able to get the right angle and just sit on it a tiny bit more. Because I know that was kind of, it seemed like he was just gearing up, ready to just try to, you know, not launch one past the red seat at Fenway quite consistently over there in right field. And if he's not trying to do that and not trying to swing out of his shoes, that's going to create, I think, more consistency throughout the whole season for him.
Agreed. KB, you have anything to add on that?
No, I think you guys said what I was thinking. Plus, it doesn't help that I haven't, like, watched anything. But, I mean, who doesn't love a Rafi Devers home run?
Yeah, it's great.
It's probably Gerrit Cole.
Gerrit Cole probably hates him. You're right. You are right, Gerrit Cole. Just Rafi Devers' child, Gerrit Cole. I mean, I hope it's something that a lot of the lefties, all of them really, but especially Massa, gets back into. Like, I remember his first big league home run last year was to left field, and that,
yeah, it was on the monster, and they wouldn't give the ball back.
The kid ruined Massa's rookie season, even though he went on a torrid stretch for like 3 months anyway. But like, those pitches that were up, it felt like he was starting to roll over them as the season went along. Same thing with Rafi, or he like pulled a lazy fly ball to right or right center. And if they can start hitting the ball the other way, it doesn't even have to be elevated. Like, you can hit it on the ground the other way, hit the ball hard down the lines. Like, you'll be a much better hitter just going with these pitches instead of trying to, you know, get so out of your approach and hammer the ball to right field that, you know, you start rolling over on those pitches or hitting lazy fly balls or just flat out missing them. I mean, Casas in the second half especially started driving the ball the other way, and we saw he became like one of the top 5 hitters in the sport, you know, post All-Star break. So hopefully that's something that it's encouraging to see Rafi do it, but hopefully that's something that kind of has a trickle down effect for the rest of the team. For me, my big sort of thing that I have noticed early on in camp is Garrett Whitlock looks really good. as a starter. I think he's looked awesome. I think he, other than he threw like a 3-1 changeup to Adley Rutschman in his debut this spring, was kind of elevated, and Adley just did Adley things and killed the Red Sox and hit a home run to dead center. But since then, he's what, gone 4 innings, allowed 1 run. He got 8 strikeouts in total in camp. I don't think he's walked anybody. A lot of weak contact, especially in his outing yesterday against Detroit, or 2 days ago. No, it was yesterday. I think he's looked really good. I'm not jumping back into the deep end of the Garrett Whitlock as a starter bandwagon, because I think his body just can't handle it. I think his stuff is more than capable of translating. His body is the issue. And I know he bulked up, but I can't help but notice that he looks really good. Hauk apparently looked really good in his outing as well. And then Winkowski looked really good against the Nationals. I mean, I know it's the Nationals, but I mean, like, Dylan Cruz played, a lot of the regulars in that lineup, Joey Gallo played, etc. Like, faced some quality hitters in that lineup, and he looked good. So a lot of those guys at the end of the rotation that we were kind of worried about kind of fitting in have all looked pretty good to me, especially.
Yeah, and Cutter Crawford hasn't gone a second time yet, but I was a little – he got a little bit hit on his in his first inning. I think he – I don't know if he went 2 innings. I think he might have only gone 1. I can't remember exactly. But the thing is that's – and it'll be interesting to see as they get more stretched out, as guys get sent out of camp and assigned to the minor leagues. It'll be interesting to see when they start to pitch a couple more innings if that consistency can translate. Because the problem is, like, with Garrett Whitlock right now, or Josh Winkowski right now, these guys are pitching 2 innings max. And that's exactly what we would expect from them in a 2-inning role in, like, the bullpen. Is to come down, come in, shut people down for 2 innings at a time. And so to see that happen, that doesn't surprise me. That's what I already know that they can do, because that's why I think they'd be kind of a good fit in the bullpen, right? It sucks that we're even in this position right now where if we just signed Montgomery, we would have Hauk, Whitlock, and Winkowski all in the bullpen, and we wouldn't even have to worry about it. But I think that now we're stuck with trying to figure out what's the best situation. I feel like we already know that these guys are going to be good arms in the bullpen at 2 innings. So I'm not really reading too much into it until we can see them start to go 3-4 innings, face the lineup for a second time, and see if that stuff translates, especially Tanner Hauk. Like, we all know his first time through the order, he's elite. So that wouldn't surprise me if he goes out there and he's elite. We got to see him as he get through the game, as he gets through his progressions. Be curious to know the influence that Andrew Bailey has on him at that point, because I don't think you're going to see that right away. So that's kind of my take on, like, what we're seeing so far. I like to see the strikeouts for Garrett Whitlock. I feel like he kind of lacked the swing and miss a lot last year. So, like, that part was encouraging, but again, super early. And until they start to get stretched out a little bit further, this is what I'll say. There's not a lot you can read into these spring training starts unless it's something as bad as, like, Alex Manoah's first start. I don't know if you guys saw this, but I think he hit 3 batters and walked 4 in his first start. And I looked at the, like, pitch spray chart, and it was, like, literally a couple of them, like, up at the batter's heads. Like, this, he was absolutely all over the place. I feel like you can kind of read into something like that. But otherwise, I'm not taking too much stock in that.
Or Carlos Rodon giving up 4 home runs in live BP to minor leaguers. But hey, it's okay, because he'd rather give them up to his own guys than, you know, maybe if they're good hitters or they wouldn't be there. Just what a bizarre thing to say. But yeah, I hear your point. The big thing for me with Whitlock, especially, his second start wasn't televised. It was all based off of, like, what I was reading on game day or getting the vibe from on Twitter from people who were listening, and then also, you know, guys down there in attendance for like on the beat and whatnot, was his changeup has apparently looked really good. He really lost the feel for it last year. And again, small sample size, it's only been 5 innings. But if his changeup is working, there's no reason to believe that he can't, you know, piece together or get a bunch of strikeouts for starters, but also piece together, you know, 4 or 5 innings, a rip as a starter, maybe even 6. I mean, we saw it against the Angels last year. He had a 7-inning start. I think he had another 7-inning start against, maybe he was it Minnesota? I don't remember. He had a couple 7-inning outings last year. So he can do it. It's a matter of whether or not his secondary pitches are on. And if his changeup's on, and so far it's looked good in camp, you know, the sky's the limit for him as a pitcher. I agree with you, though, that it'd be nice if they just signed Monty so those three could just go in the bullpen, or you could, you know, stuff Winkowski in AAA as starter depth, which I think is what they're going to do anyway. But it'd be nice. But it's encouraging to at least see, you know, those three looked good. And there's limited samples so far in camp, especially Hauk, because Hauk is a notorious shitter in spring training. I remember a couple years ago, especially, he had like 9 walks and 3 strikeouts and like a 12 ERA. He was an absolute trash can. And then, you know, 2022 happened, which was not really a good argument in favor of him, but that's beside the point.
I remember coming out of spring training last year, he was asked like right at the ending, like, do you think that, you know, this is going to change when the season starts? And he's like, I remember him having a quote that was something like, oh yeah, it'll be different in the games. Like, we're just testing stuff out down here. And I remember people being like, what are you saying that for, man? Like, this is when you're supposed to be testing stuff out. Like, this is when you're supposed to be getting game ready and, you know, trying to lock in and get ready for opening day. And he was, you know, basically saying, no, like, I'm just experimenting in spring training. I'm not worried about it. Like, when the season starts, like, I'll be locked in. And he was like pretty locked in other than third time through the order. But his actual stuff, like, I remember that being a situation that he had talked about before.
Yeah. I mean, spring training is definitely a time to be working on some stuff. You'd like to see guys that are not established yet in their specific roles be a little bit better, but ultimately, like you said, you know, at the top of this episode, you can only take so much from spring training. You cannot get too high on players doing well, cannot get too low. I like to be delusional and think all the good things are going to translate and all the bad things are just spring training. But, you know, it's, you know, we'll
so see. Someone else who looked really good was Blaze Jordan. A lot of good contact. Good to see him, you know, out there at third base. And he just put really, really good bat to ball in the couple of games that were televised. So that was really exciting to see. I wish we were able to be televised to see Roman Anthony's 2 hits that he had this week as well in one of the games that was not televised. It was also super cool that when Roman Anthony played on Sunday, I think it was on Sunday, he walked twice and he wasn't chasing. He just got up there and walked 2 times in a row. Super impressive as a young guy, you know, anxious to prove himself in big league camp and to get up there and not just be swinging from his heels. That was really cool to see. Kyle Teal, on the other hand, got up there on the plate and was swinging from his heels and, you know, definitely was trying to make a little bit more of a splash and didn't quite look as good.
No, that strikeout was, oh my goodness. The pitch was like at his ankles. And I think it would have been a walk. If he took, I think it was a 3-2 pitch, and he just like he swung like he decided before the previous pitch even came that he was swinging. If it was 3-2, it was a mess. It was not great. But yeah, I wish we could have seen. You know, that's what I don't understand about spring training. Like, what are we missing on Nesson here by broadcasting the Red Sox as opposed to Dining Playbook or Charlie Moore Outdoors? And I don't want to disparage the people who watch those shows or the people who are on those shows, because I'm sure they're lovely people, but what the hell are we doing? Can we just watch the damn Red Sox? Like,
we're like, why couldn't at least one of the teams be broadcasting? Like, okay, maybe both teams don't want to broadcast. That's fine. But there's 2 teams there that both have broadcast contracts. What right. are we doing?
Right. And then Nesson has like Nesson Plus too. Like, there's a second Nesson channel. You could just put it on Nesson Plus. But there's like, I mean, I know, like, I think last spring and then even a couple times during the regular season, the Tigers rolled out the broadcast that was just game sound, no broadcast. Like, it's kind of poor, but like, it sounds cool, but at least you get to watch the game. And like, that's what I want to see. Like, I don't want to be reading Baseball Savant and tracking on game day and making my opinions on what players should be making the roster on that. Like, well, like, it's just silly.
There was a game too that wasn't even Red Sox, but it was number one prospect Jackson Holliday versus number one prospect Paul Skeens. And that entire like at bat wasn't televised or broadcast at all. And unless someone was videoing it on their phone, we wouldn't have ever seen a clip from it. And like Skeens is throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs to Jackson Holliday. Holiday, you know, grounds out, and like these type of interactions and at bats are just, they're gone. You know,
they had the previous three number one picks in that game because Henry Davis was also starting and catching that game, and we don't get to watch any of them play. It's just weird to me. Like, I get to an extent, like, these broadcasting deals, and like a lot of these teams don't have their primary guy down in Florida yet. Like, I know Nesson doesn't have Dave down there yet. You know, Mike Monaco only did a couple of games last year, but the secondary guy not there yet. Although, didn't he get hired by somebody?
Who?
Or no, Monaco?
No,
or no, he was just in the race. He was just in the race for the, I think, was it the White Sox job before Benetti got it? Or no, Tigers got Benetti. Well, but he was in the race for White Sox.
Monaco was in the race, and then Will Fleming was in the race, but they both did not end up getting it.
That's right. So, like, I know these guys aren't down in Fort Myers yet, or not Fort Myers. Yeah, aren't down there yet, but, like, I don't know. I feel like they could still put these games on TV, whether it be Nesson Plus or regular Nesson. It's just, I just want to watch these guys play, and I want to watch these young guys play especially. And, yeah, it's just not fun when you're have to sign up for Fubo free trial and waste one of your days because they're not playing.
Insanely misleading.
I could have saved you there.
So I do think that there is something to be said about the bullpen battle as well, like being a really interesting storyline to watch. Like, one thing that you can take away from these games is watching the people who do have to come in a major league game ready situation and pitch one inning and shut people down, right? Or pitch two innings and shut people down, and that's the bullpen. So while I don't necessarily read into the starters that much, I do think we can read into the bullpen. I want to talk about that in a little bit, but I know we wanted to hit on a couple of, like, injury updates, kind of talk about where some of the players are at. But before we move on to the injury updates, was there any other final comments on any of the games?
Yeah, Sadon looks really good. He looks really good. Like, the kind of guy that, you know, Alex Cora has been raving about. He's been taking a lot of close pitches today, especially. He had two 0-2 counts. He worked a walk on one, drew another count full, and I think got a single. Then also stole the base today. He's driven in a couple runs. He's hitting the ball hard. He looks really good. And if it was a true competition between him and Willier, which I don't think it is, which I'm not 100% sure it is, I feel like it should be, but he's killing him. Like, he's destroying Willier in this one-on-one if it was an actual competition between the two. Like, I feel really good about him right now. Obviously, it's early in camp, and he looked really good when he first came up last year and then kind of fizzled out. But he looks really good, and Willier on the flip side has not looked very good at all.
Yeah, I haven't been – I guess Willier's been forgettable, and Sadon has not. So that's kind of where I would agree that they've been set apart there. Tyler O'Neill has been making good contact. Trevor Story's been making good contact, which has been good to see. But yeah, I think Sadon, like, I still think they're going to keep him in the minors for the first 50 games to manipulate his service contract. I think that just makes the most sense. But I mean, they just signed CJ Cron, which we, I don't even know. Do we even get to that, actually? Did we even talk about that?
No, we were going to talk about it after we talked about the injury updates. We can talk about it now and then go back into it. So, yeah, the Red Sox signed CJ Cron to a minor league deal this morning, Friday morning. It's a $2 million deal if he makes the MLB roster. It's got that upward mobility clause in it that Jorge Alfaro had last year. Joely also has one, and Roberto Perez also has one. That was all announced by Chris Cotillo of Mass Live this morning. I'll start with you, KB. What were your initial thoughts on the Cron signing and how you think he kind of fits in with this roster?
I mean, it seems like, I feel like it was super random. Like, it wasn't something I expected. But I think it'll all end up playing out in, like, a beneficial way. Like, I was super confused by it at first, but, like, thinking it through, I mean, like, he could be a power hitter, like, if we needed one.
Yeah.
But that might mean losing my beloved Bobby.
Oh no! Whatever will we do without Bobby D? He can go.
Do not double thumbs down Bobby D.
Double thumbs down.
I am like the most random supporter of him.
He will. He can stay in Worcester and hit 40 home runs this year. He will set the AAA home run record.
He could DH on opening day.
He absolutely cannot.
I really should not. I need to stop making that joke because people are going to think I'm serious. No.
Okay. I'll fight you. I'll fight you on this episode. I will do it.
We are losing followers actively.
Everyone's
damn, like, we just lost 10 followers in the last 3 seconds. Thanks.
Report. Yeah, okay. I do not promote Bobby D as being DH for the record. No, I think it'll be interesting because when are they going to have him down in Worcester for, like, how many games do you think that he'll play down in Worcester? Not CJ, not Bobby.
Wait, sorry, Crone? I don't know if he'll play a game in Worcester, honestly. Like, oh, it's tough to, because he's signing late relative to, well, I guess it's not even relative to the rest of free agency because all these other guys are still unsigned, but he's signing relatively late. He's only got about a month to get prepared for the season. And I know a lot of big league hitters talk about how they only need a couple of weeks, and I'm sure he's been working out. I really think he'll either play well enough to make the opening day roster, or at least well enough to use his upward mobility clause and then go somewhere else. Kind of like Alfaro didn't do last year, which was shocking. But then utilized an opt-out later and ended up on another team. But I think Crone will at least open the year on the bench for this team. I think he all but 86 is the idea of Bobby Dalbec on the opening day roster. It'd be nice if he could provide some thump off the bench, at least against lefties. He's been really bad against them the last couple of years, historically pretty good against them. And he's got a swing that's... I thought initially tailor-made for Fenway, but he actually goes the other way a lot, which is mildly concerning for a righty. But I don't think he'll play a game in Worcester. I think he'll either be on the opening day roster or he'll end up somewhere else. What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, he's starting the opening day on the bench, but he's definitely on the team. The person that we keep forgetting about is Rev Snyder, who I'm just tired of watching in spring training, to be honest with you. I'm so bored of watching Rob Rev Snyder. Like, he's so good at what he does against left-handed pitching, but he's just so boring to watch. Like, I think he's a great guy from his My Story that I've watched, and I don't dislike him as a person, but he doesn't have unless he's facing a lefty, he doesn't have that potential to do something crazy at any moment. So I'm just like, whenever he's leading off or batting cleanup, I'm like, oh man, I'd rather be watching Willier or watching, Roman Anthony or whoever it is right now. And I feel like he's a candidate to be DFA'd very early on in the year. Like, I could see it because he's a right-handed hitting outfielder. I could see the bench starting off with, let me see what the outfield would be. Duran, O'Neill, and Abreu, and then Massa DH. So that's the four outfielders. And then you have Crone. You've got, Rev Snyder. So you got Crone, Rev Snyder, Reyes, Reese McGuire. And then I don't remember, do they only have four people or five people on the bench?
I think it's only four. I mean, I know they announced that they're thinking about going down to 12 pitchers, which would mean 14, so five bench guys. But I don't think that's in effect this season. I could be wrong on that, but I would assume it's 13 and 13.
Okay. So if those are the bench guys, then there's no room for Bobby and there's no room for Sedan, right? But I could see it being a situation where Bobby stays down, Crone stays up, Rev Snyder's on there, but then after the 50 games are up in the minors, if an injury doesn't pop up, then we could see Rev Snyder getting DFA'd or traded. And then Rafaela coming up to be that right-handed hitting extra utility person who can, come in and be a right-handed bat. So that's kind of my take on it. but we'll see if that ends up coming to fruition or not.
How KB is with Bobby is how I am with Rob Refsnyder. I irrationally love the man. I'm not going to lose sleep. I'm not going to lose any sleep over him if he doesn't, if he's not on the roster, you know, opening day or in May or whatever. I do think he gets a lot of flack. I think he's put a lot of up situations where he's set up to fail, like when he's hitting cleanup. Like last year, he did so often. But yeah, against lefties, he's pretty good. I think Crone definitely puts Bobby in AAA. And then I'm with you there. If Sadon is too good to keep down, despite the enticement, is that a word, of keeping him in AAA for 50 games and then buying an extra year of service time, and then Willier, you know, kind of rights the ship and makes the opening day roster as well, I could see Refsnyder getting cut. I mean, he's a singles hitter at this point. It seems like 2022, for some reason, a year that power was down, is the only year that he had any thump, and it was like real thump. He had like 9 homers. He was good. And yeah, now he's like a singles merchant, walks merchant, only against lefties, which is concerning. But yeah, I think Crone will probably play DH a lot against lefties. They'll move Massa. That'll be when Massa plays left, I think. A lot of lefties. They'll keep Duran out of the lineup, or Willier, to kind of keep them in a true platoon situation. And then he'll play first sparsely if Casas needs to DH a day or just not play. I think that'll be his role. He'll probably play, like, if he is on the opening day roster and plays the full season, we're talking like maybe 75, 80 games as a backup. But he's got the kind of power that he could put up 15 or 20 home runs in those 80 games. I mean, he did it last year. I think he's, what, like 15 in 78 games or something crazy like that? Let me double check. It was only 12? Oh, okay. I'm just a liar, but 12 home runs in 70 games, which is still a decent clip, but everything else is way down for him. But we'll see on him. So I did mention Duran. Or any last thoughts on Crone before we move back to the injury updates?
I just know we talked about him earlier in the offseason as like an option that's way down the list of right-handed power bats because he doesn't offer a lot of versatility on the field, and his upside just isn't as high as some of the other guys. So it's not like he's a complete surprise. I just didn't hope. I hoped we'd be able to settle for more than him. But he was pretty baller on some of the MLB The Show cards that they have for him. So, I always thought of him as just a massive power guy. I didn't realize he was going to sign for a minor league deal.
Yeah. I thought I was kind of in KB's boat here with like being surprised that he was the guy they signed. I thought, because all this talk was about them going after a right-handed power hitting outfielder. Like they were in on Tommy Pham, Duvall, Michael A. Taylor, and they end up signing CJ Crone, who obviously can't play the outfield. Barely, like he's a historically good first baseman, but they have Casas there. Like they're not going to move Casas to DH because they have Massa there. So it's like a really bizarre signing. Like the thing that Bobby offers that Crone doesn't is versatility. Crone's a better hitter, like plain and simple, just a flat out better hitter, even at his worst. But Bobby at least offered the versatility to play corner infield and corner outfield, is pretty fast, has a good arm. And then Crone's like DH first base. If they were planning on playing Massa every day left, I'd be cool with him DHing to kind of see if he'd replace Turner. But it is kind of a weird signing for me when the alternative seemed to have been bringing back Duvall, who can play first, I think, a little bit, at least did a couple of times in Atlanta, I'm pretty sure, or, you know, bringing back Tommy Pham or somebody like that who can hit power from the right side but also play the outfield, which would have definitely gotten rid of Refsnyder in that case. But moving back, because I mentioned Duran and Casas and those guys. So Duran debuted today. I believe he went 0-for-2 with a walk. Had a strikeout, you know, first time in game action. Casas is set to debut tomorrow, Saturday. So today, if you're listening to it, you know, the day we release it. And then Grissom will play Sunday is the hope. They've been kind of, I don't want to say babying guys because that's not the right word, but like Duran had the foot surgery last year. They've been taking it slow with them. And then obviously Casas has been getting over the flu. So he's going to be back into game action Saturday. So it'll be nice to see these guys. Hopefully, I think tomorrow's game's on TV, so we'll get to see Casas. I'm assuming all the weekend games will be televised, so we'll probably get to see Grissom as well. I'm really excited to see him, especially because, you know, that's the guy you got for Chris Sale. Your rotation is in a worse position today than it was probably, you know, this time last year. So hopefully Grissom can hit and we'll get the first taste of what he can be on Sunday. Again, don't get too high or too low because 2 for 2 with two homers, you know, let's pump the brakes. He's not, you know, going to be friggin' Willie Mays, but, you know, I'm excited.
Yeah, the games are both televised this weekend. They are doing a split squad on Saturday, though. The home game's being broadcast, the away game is not. So we'll see how they split the squad up.
I feel like, especially with Casas getting over the flu, and this is something that, you know, Cora has done a lot in spring training, especially early in spring trainings, is the regulars don't travel. So if the home game is being broadcast, I imagine we'll see Casas tomorrow, which is nice. They'll send some of like the bench guys to wherever the away game is, but I'm excited to see them finally. It'll be nice. Hopefully they can, you know, be huge parts of the lineup because this team's going to score runs. They'll find a way because they always do. They're the Red Sox. They play at Fenway. But it'd be nice if, you know, Grissom is a guy that is up to the billing he had in AAA and Casas doesn't get off to another slow start. So I'm really curious to see what they look like, especially in their first cracks at it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to see them back in the lineup. I know with the flu, anytime you're dealing with the flu, it's not obviously a serious injury, but it's really refreshing to be this, you know, early on in spring training, which is still early, but to not really have a ton of serious injuries is like the first time in a long time, I feel like, that we haven't had injuries with the starting rotation. Knock on wood. I don't know why I would have said that. Oh my gosh, why did I just say that out loud? But like we're dealing with Duran, whose his surgery already happened. He's just taking it slow, so that's not really anything serious. Then you have your, you know, Trevor Story's healthy, so we're not dealing with that again. Really, it's Grissom's hamstring thing, which has never been an issue before. It's just randomly popped up here. And then Duran, we already talked about Duran. Who was the other person? Oh yeah, we already said that Casas was just sick, so nothing serious. I'm actually happy about it. There was only one person right now who's kind of popping up on the injury report for a more serious injury, and that is Brian Mata.
Go figure. Change the record.
Yeah. He's been in this organization for so long, hasn't progressed past AA. He's been injured. He's had the training staff questioning his work ethic. He's out of options. So he either makes the major league team or he's gone. Now, I don't know if you guys know this. If you get traded, does it reset your options with that new team? Or how does that work?
Nope.
So if he was DFA'd by us and then traded, does that mean he has to stick on their major league team?
I don't know how that works, to be honest. I haven't really thought of it because typically, like in just over the recent history of the Red Sox, like last year they did it with Matt Barnes, but he would have been on the MLB roster anywhere he ended up anyway, because he was on an MLB deal. I don't know how that works, to be honest. I think they would end up on the 40-man, so he would have to be in the majors. I do think so. But I'm not sure 100%.
Just curious to know about that, but that's pretty much where he's at. Like this would have been his last chance to make the major league roster with the Red Sox. He's out of options and he's dealing with an injury here in camp. I'll throw it to you first, Jordan. What's your take on the Brian Mata situation?
Stick a fork in him. The kid's done. Like seriously, I don't want to be dramatic or anything, but Like you said, he hasn't progressed. I think he made a couple appearances in AAA a couple years ago, or maybe last year, but he was horrible. So it's not even like he flashed in AAA. Like his command is spotty at best. I know Cora was raving about the stuff last camp. He has great stuff. Like he does. The stuff is undeniably there. He could at least be a reliever, and he was in the running to be a reliever. But with him being hurt, Slayton looking good, Weissert looking fine, Campbell's looked fine. Like I'm cool with just letting him go be somebody else's problem. Like, I don't feel attached to him anymore. I think his time in the organization is done now. I don't know if they'll DFA him and trade him. Or I shouldn't say time in the organization, but his chance of making the opening day roster, I think, is cooked. He'll either be DFA'd and traded, or they'll somehow sneak him through waivers like they did with Edward Bizzardo a few years back, where everyone was shocked when he got DFA'd and he still stuck around. Like, I think something similar to that could happen with Mata. His stuff's better, so maybe not, but he has no shot of making the opening day roster, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that there's even a consideration at this point, which is sad. KB, have you seen much about Mata, or do you have an opinion one way or the other on Brian Mata's chances?
I haven't, actually. I don't think I've seen him pitch, like, maybe once. Maybe. But I feel like he's, like you, like we're saying, like, it's, like, always an injury thing. And it's, like, at what point are you just, like, going to throw in the towel? And, like you said, he's out of options. He's injured. Is he going to be... Are we going to wait out the injury and see if he's better than, like, another reliever? Or are we just going to... We're just going to let him go.
Now, there might be a caveat to that, where if they stick him on the 60-man... The 60-day IL, I think he could potentially avoid having to get released before opening day. So it could be one of those situations where they stick him on there and they try to rehab him through, you know, the Florida Coast League, through the Florida Complex, get him to a point where maybe he's ready to come back in. And by that point, if they keep him out long enough, you know, like they did with a lot of these guys last year, you bring him back right when you need someone to come back in for, when your bullpen's starting to get a little taxed, you have him come in for a series in the middle of June, you know, Kyle Bear claw him up and throw him to the wolves.
Oh God. Don't say that.
I was at that game.
Oh no.
That's horrible.
Okay. We need to go back to that for a second. You were at the Kyle Bear claw game.
I was at the Kyle Bear claw game, and it was really, I felt horrible. The game started off pretty good. It started off good. The vibes were good too. I was surrounded by Astros fans, but luckily they were pretty chill. And then Kyle Bearclaw comes out and he gets massacred. And at this point we're all like, why is AC not pulling him? Like, what is happening here? Like, this is awful. And I'm like looking on Twitter and I'm like, why is he still on the mound? He is like, he looks like he's crying. Like, this poor kid. It was a really tough watch. At first I was so angry. I'm so pissed because I'm like, you are destroying us. I don't even remember the score. Wasn't it like in the teens?
He gave up 11 runs.
Yeah, it was like 16 to something, I think, if I remember correctly. And I was so pissed for like 3 innings, and then it just turned into pure like empathy for him. It's like, this guy is just killing himself out there, and it's like a dumpster fire. You can't look away, but you just felt so bad.
I'm looking at that stat line right now. Holy shit. It's so bad.
It's bad. And to make matters even worse, Altuve hit for the cycle that game, and I was like, "This is it. This is it." I think that it was at a point in the season.
He might have hit for the cycle against Bearclaw. I think he might have been the first person to hit for the cycle against the same
just one,
the same reliever too. Like, especially. I'm looking at the stat line now. Holy crap. 11 hits, 10 earned, 2 homers, 5 walks, 1 strikeout.
His ERA went from like 2 to like 14.
Yeah, so his first 2 outings, he pitched back-to-back days, he allowed 1 run in 3 1/3. So it was 2.70. His outing just on August 28th, that fateful day in August, his ERA was over 20 for that day. 20.77. He got Ryan Webber'd. We have a new Ryan Webber. It's Kyle Barraclough. It's crazy because he got DFA'd, and I was at his next start in Worcester.
Really?
Yeah, me and Tim went to the game, and I was like, "Who's starting today?" And we checked. And we're like, "It's fucking Barraclough. We can't escape the nightmare." He gave him a bomb in the first inning too, which was just unbelievable. Yeah, that poor guy.
He was elite. He won the minor league. He won minor league pitcher of the year for the Woo Sox.
He was good, like, for them.
Yeah,
it was so strange. And he was an all-star as a reliever, like in 2018 or 19, I'm pretty sure, which is like crazy. With the Marlins, I think it was. That's where he was initially. Let me double check that. No, he wasn't an all-star, but he had a year. His first 3 years in the league, he had ERAs of 2.59, 2.85, and 3. Like, he was good. Not on August 28th, 2023, though. He was horrible.
To be fair, that was a tough – I mean, the Astros are a tough team to pitch against, too, because, I mean, he was going up against Altuve, Jordan Alvarez.
Poor
guy. I mean, I don't even think Jeremy Pena was playing that good that night, but it was so brutal. And then I'm like a glutton for punishment. I went to the game the next day, too. I was like, why am I back at this godforsaken place?
I think they still lost, but at least it wasn't 400-6 or whatever the score was. Barraclough didn't
should have just been mercy rule at that point.
Yeah.
I just remember there was a moment in the game when they cut to a shot of the bullpen and no one's warming up. And everyone's just sitting down and the camera just cuts over and you see Verdugo and he just turns around and looks over his shoulder, like at the bullpen, like, is anyone warming up? And that was the moment when, like, the announcers, I don't remember who was calling that game. I think it was definitely OB, but I don't remember who was the counterpart in that game. I feel like it was Euculus, but I don't remember for sure. But they were just like, they couldn't believe it. Dave O'Brien, like, was beside himself that there was no one warming up. That was the wildest game.
I think the excuse was that the bullpen was so tired, so they just let him die out there. I remember because I was sitting behind home plate in one of like the lodge things behind home plate, and I was just like straining my eyes like into the bullpen. I'm like, is there any movement going on back there? I'm like checking Twitter. My friends are texting me who are watching from home. They're like, is anyone in the bullpen? I'm like, no, there's no one in the bullpen. And I think a lot of people were mad. It was like that point in the season where a lot of people were mad at Cora's like managing decisions. And that was just like the cherry on top with letting that man die on the mound.
I think there were over 500 that entering that game too. So it was like, and they just like played pretty well with the Dodgers for at least two of the three games. And that series killed them. They just did not recover. They let go of the rope. And I think that game was when they really did. So I think the next day, Bayo got hit around a bit. And then the next day, Cutter got smoked and they got swept. They were like 3 over .500 and they let go of the rope. And they were toast at that point.
Trying to remember who it was that was available for that game. I'm pretty sure it was only Chris Martin, and it was either Chris Martin or Kenley was like the only other option available. And so it was going to be whoever ended up starting that game. Barraclough.
Sale.
It was Chris Sale, Barraclough, and then I think Jansen was the only other person available. And so they were like, we're just going to have to figure out a way to get to Jansen and bridge the way to Jansen because of the rest days. And like, that's the struggle that you run when we were playing two bullpen games a week.
Yeah.
Like, it was absolutely insane.
The bullpen games.
Barraclough, yeah. Man. I'm like looking at the stat line again. Sale went 4 2/3, 7 hits, 3 earned, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts. And then Barraclough, the man comes rotting in. 4 1/3, 10 runs. What a fuck!
I hope
they were winning when he came in. They were winning when he came in the game. All he had to do was not be horrible, and alas, he was horrible. And they
died. Did Turner have a home run in that game?
Duvall did.
Duvall
hit the go ahead home run in the fifth off of Javier, and like everyone, I remember watching that live, And it sounded like the crowd was going ballistic. And then, boom, here comes Mr. Kyle Barraclough out of the bullpen to save the day. And by save the day, I mean fucking kill everybody. It was a disaster. Oh, my God.
Did anybody at any point boo KB?
I there was definitely booing. Yeah. Yeah, it was... I'm trying to remember. I think it was like, it felt like everyone was in agreement. Like there was definitely booing. And then like the longer it went on, it was just like, oh, oh, oh.
I can imagine it's not as bad as it was probably at that 28-3 game against the,
Blue Jays. But the Blue Jays. There was no saving them. I think Caleb Ort gave up 11 in that game. So like there's a theme
that
here.
That man is one traveling.
That guy's getting passed around so much. This offseason,
sure, like, of the traveling Caleb Ort.
Is he still with Baltimore now? I can't remember.
I'll check. I have no idea. It's tough to keep track of the man. He's in high demand, but also not in demand at all. He's with Baltimore. He's not pitched in spring training yet, though. Oh wait, no, he has. He pitched a scoreless inning with a strikeout, so he's going to be their closer probably and win reliever of the year. He's finally found his home. Mystery Ort.
So that's actually a great segue to relievers and bringing it back full circle. We were talking about the reliever battle here in spring training, trying to figure out kind of the plan for what the bullpen looks like, right? Because obviously the starters, we got the three guys fighting for the starting rotation, but we've got the bullpen then and fighting for kind of who's going to end up making the bullpen in the kind of middle to late relief spot. And the guys that we kind of think that are in it for right now, we talked about Brian Mata already just because he's out of options. So he has to be there or he has to be on the injured list or cut. We've got Justin Slayton, Rule 5 draft pick, has to make the major league roster or he gets sent back to Texas. Or actually, no, he gets passed through waivers, at which point any other team has the option to keep him on their major league roster. And then if he passes through waivers or gets cut by those teams, then he gets sent back to Texas. So we got Slayton, and then we've got Weissert. We've got the guy's name starts with an L. I can't remember. Lutke.
Oh, Lucas Lutke, yeah.
Lucas Lutke. Who else am I missing?
Zach Kelly and Chris Murphy.
Murphy.
There's a lot of mouths to feed on like one or two roster spots. And it's tough to, because I feel like, oh, and Isaiah Campbell.
Yeah.
He could start in AAA as well. He's got some options left. Like, they're, Cooper it's Criswell. Nice. Cooper Criswell. He's looked pretty good, too. So, like, it's a good problem to have, for sure. I don't even know. Like, Slayton, I think, has done more than enough. I mean, granted, it's still early, so he could completely fall apart. But I think he's looked really good, you know, so far in his, you know, one inning at a time. That he's been out there today. He pitched a scoreless inning against the Twins. I don't think he's allowed to run in spring training yet, which is encouraging, obviously, being a reliever. It's tough for me to kind of decide or think about who I think won't make it as of right now. I feel like Weissert's probably the early candidate to not make it just because that command is a mess. Dude throws hard, got a wipeout slider, no idea where it's going. And then it's, you know, I think he is who he is. Like he had a 4.05 ERA or something with the Yankees last year. That's probably about what he is. He's a guy that comes up, you know, like you were talking about with Brian Mata, Matt. He'd come up in like mid-June when the bullpen's taxed and he'll just spot them for a series or two and then get sent back down. I don't think he's going to be a mainstay in the Red Sox bullpen.
Yeah, I think that if I had to guess, Cooper Criswell probably starts in the minors. I think that they Slayton just because of the situation. If he just proves he's adequate, I think he starts in the majors. I think Zach Kelly starts in the majors. I think Chris Murphy starts in the majors. And then I think Campbell starts in the majors. And then I think that we'll see the other guys start in the minors with some options potentially depending on injuries and other stuff as the season progresses. But it's that's going to be the race to watch, I think, because especially if Kenley gets traded mid season or here before spring training ends, because you never know. It could be a situation where, you know, we see Tanner Houck having to shift to the closer role, Garrett Whitlock having to shift towards that closer role, maybe Chris Murphy, and that kind of slides everyone up the depth chart. With John Schreiber already being traded away, there's already an extra spot open in the bullpen right now. We signed Liam Hendricks, but he's not technically going to be taking up a roster spot until next, well, till the All-Star break, they say, or midway through the year, potentially. So I think there's a lot to be said about the competition and just kind of keeping an eye on training camp as it progresses. But my early favorites, I think Slayton's a lock right now, and we'll see if that changes if he implodes as the spring training continues.
I want to throw one more name into the mix because I completely forgot about him, but he looked pretty good in his one outing that I remember him having. Brandon Walter. Also, I think he pitched 2 scoreless innings in his spring debut. I can double check that. But 2 innings in his spring debut, had a couple strikeouts in his second inning of work. He pitched one game for 2 innings, didn't allow a run, had 2 strikeouts. He's another guy that I think some of these guys, and you mentioned Criswell and now with Walter as well, and even Winkowski, I think those three will be in the AAA rotation. I don't think they'll be relievers. If they get called up, they may be as relievers unless there's an injury in the rotation. But I think those three will be down there as starter depth, kind of like Mr. Bearclaw, sweating, going through flashbacks. But I think those guys that you mentioned, you know, Campbell, Slayton, and Murphy. Murphy's got a leg up on everybody, I think, just because he's a lefty and they need a second one. Like Lucas Litke got shelled his first time out, was fine his second time out, and he's a vet. He was good with the Yankees a few years ago. So like maybe he's got an outside shot, but they'd have to clear a 40-man spot for him, and maybe that's Mata, maybe that's, you know, whoever. But you know,
well Mata and Hendricks are both on the 40-man right now. If they want to put CJ Krohn on, they'll probably have to move Hendricks anyways. He's clearly going to be out for 60 days. So there's at least one spot open right now. Yeah, they're going to have to at least free another one. But there's some other random out infielder that they claimed off waivers that's like on the 40-man right now that I could see.
Oh, Romy Gonzalez is on the 40-man. I think Jamie Westbrook might be on the 40-man too, possibly.
Yeah, I know Romy is. I looked at it. I know for sure that one. I don't know. I can't remember the other person. But
hit a bomb today. Didn't get to see it. Because nobody got to see it, but I do think the bullpen's in an interesting spot, and like obviously Martin's a lock. Obviously, I almost just said Schreiber was a lock, idiot. Right. R.I.P. to a legend. Kenley's a lock as of right now. I mean, like the thing with Kenley is he's going. Obviously, he'll be there if he's within the organization still. He sounds like a dude who is like fully ready to be gone though. And like some of his comments, you know, talk like basically alluding to, I mean, he said like the vision was one thing last year and it's different this year, which like a lot of people ran with as like him being like, he was lied to. There's a different, you know, there's different leadership now. So obviously the vision's going to be a little different, but yeah, that man does not want to be a Red Sox anymore. I don't think like, it just seems,
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to his interview on Bradfo's show, but he actually straight up said like, yeah, they said year one, we're going to be competitive, but year two, we're going to really go for it. That's what they straight up told him. And so, you know, that was what he signed on for. His goal is to pitch until he's 40, but he really is continuing because he wants to get the final out in a World Series. That's like been something that he's looked forward to, is just being the person to close out a World Series game. So he wants to play for a team that's going to be competing. That's what drew him in. And now to hear that that's, you know, really not the case when it's very clearly, you know, something changed. I think it's for him, he wants out because he wants to win right now. And it's so clear when they sign Hendricks to be his replacement. And they're like, Yeah, they're basically the way they have Hendricks' contracts structured out. They're like, when we trade you at the deadline, Kenley, to a contender, we have your replacement lined up and ready to go. And that's exactly, you know, what the timeline's going to match up with. Like, play with Kenley till the deadline, trade him to a contender, which, hey, listen, maybe that'll work out well for him because you'll be able to kind of see which teams are doing well at that point and who needs a closer. So maybe that'll work out for what he wants. But Hendricks will be back at that point. Then you fill him right into the Kenley closer role. And next year, you already got a closer lined up. So it's so obvious they're not bringing Kenley back. Kenley wants to go to a contender. It's obvious the Red Sox lied to him. And that's frustrating. I don't blame him at all for being upset.
Yeah, if there's one thing, like, I thought a lot of the finger pointing that happened at the end of last season was, you know, kind of gross because a lot of the players were to blame and they kind of all pointed at the front office. But everything Kenley has said since getting to camp, you know, talking about how, like, oh, you never know if we'll make the playoffs, but, you know, the vision's different. They obviously didn't go all in this winter. So it's hard to envision them making it, you know, to the dance at some point during this season. I just hope they do right by him and they trade him to a legitimate contender. It's not like one of those bubble teams. Like if like they don't trade him to like whoever's second place in the AL Central type shit. I hope they trade him to like a legitimately good team. And like, for me, I'm hoping he goes back to the Dodgers because it just makes so much sense. It still feels kind of weird not seeing him in a Dodgers uniform, even though obviously he's been gone for a few years now. They need to do right by him and they need to move him sooner rather than later. I don't want somebody that's not happy, that doesn't want to be there, because it just brings the whole vibe down, you know, in the bullpen that's poised to be a strength again. You know, if he's not happy, like, what good is he to you? Like, he's still a good pitcher, but if he's not happy, is he really going to be like that great of a leader? Like, everyone raved about him as a leader last year. Is he going to put forth that kind of effort again this season for a team he doesn't want to be on? Stuff like that. Like, I feel for Kenley and definitely think that they need to get rid of him, not get rid of him, but do right by him sooner rather than later.
KB, do you have any thoughts about Kenley's comments? Do you think that there's any way that he's on this team when the season ends?
I kind of hope so. I don't know how it would work, like you said, with like them signing Hendricks. I liked Kenley as a closer. I really did. But I think he's super justified in like how he feels and everything that he has said. It's like you were promised one thing. And I mean, he's feeling like all the same anger that we are as fans. And I think it's good that he's speaking out. It's good to hear it come from like inside of the house instead of just like all this noise from all. It's so easy to be angry as fans because it's like, sign this person, like sign this free agent, and it's so easy to get angry. But to see it almost like represented in a player like also being pissed off is like, it makes me feel like seen, for lack of a better term. It's like, yes, Kenley, like, yes. Yeah. Do I think that he's going to be here at the end of the season? Absolutely not. he deserves better. I mean, we all do, but this is so like, I don't watch football, so not to compare, but it's like the Tom Brady thing. It's like, you know, he left to go play for a team so that he could win another ring before he retires. It's like the same thing. It's like he wants to play in a World Series and close it out. Like that's such a like career moment to do. And you know, we could be optimistic and say that maybe that's going to happen with the Red Sox this year, but
I think
if you feel that optimistic, the DraftKings betting odds right now are +5,000, so go ahead and hop on that.
I'm going to put money on the Red Sox winning the World Series.
So even if the Red Sox are a surprise team and they're like on the bubble of the playoffs come deadline time, like you said, they have Liam Hendricks waiting in the wings. Now, maybe he never ends up being ready this season, and maybe this is really just a signing for 2025. But even still, I don't see Kenley still being here. And even, and yeah. Again, We saw it this past season, and it didn't end up working out for Seattle, but they traded their closer at the deadline and still were like in the thick of things into September. They traded Paul Sewald to the D-backs. Like, they could trade Kenley, and it's not like waving the white flag. I would do it now so that way he can go be on a team that he wants to be on. But yeah. I guess still, like, if you want to compete this year, it's best to have him until you have an idea of if Hendricks is coming back, and then maybe the team's good and you invest at the deadline and Kenley's happy and he wants to be on the team still, stuff like that. Cause like, maybe you're such a surprise team that he's like, okay, I want to still be here, and you can change his mind. Kind of like with the Bruins and Jake DeBrusk a few years back, or even with the to a lesser extent with the Celtics and Peyton Pritchard. Like, you give a guy a reason to stay and he'll change his mind. Obviously, you know, a couple of those guys got some pretty hefty paydays. Kenley's already getting paid and doesn't want to be here. But, you know, if the situation changes, and like, I still think even if they sign Monty, like, the situation changes so much and this team goes from like, you know, sleeper playoff contender to like legitimate wildcard possibility. It's a weird spot, and it sucks because you see the guy out there and you want them to sign him so badly. And it's like, you know how much better they'll be if you just add this dude, even if he's not an ace, because he isn't an ace. If he's not your number one starter, him being there makes you so much better. And then, like, from Kenley's side of things, yeah, I wouldn't want to be here anymore either.
When did Liam have Tommy John?
August, I think it was. I thought it was earlier. Yeah. I thought he came back sooner than that, or he got the surgery sooner than he did, but it was in August. But he still thinks he'll be back around the deadline, which is good for the Red Sox if they do trade Kenley and they're still in the race.
Yeah, I feel for Kenley. It also sucks that people are like giving him a hard time about the comments he's making. Like, it's not his doing.
I mean, Raffy's made comments too. Like, we all know what we need.
And everyone knows it. Not he's the only one saying it. Or I guess no, Rappy did say it, but
it speaks volumes when your stars are complaining about ownership and the front office not delivering on promises that were made back in December at this point, or November. I don't remember when. I think it was November that Breslow was introduced. It's discouraging. But it's nice when, you know, stars find their voices, especially Devers, because he's always seemed like the quiet guy that just goes out there and plays. But now he's like stepping up and actually being vocal about it. And it's good. And hopefully it wakes up the front office and ownership group. Don't think it will this year, but we'll see.
Well, I definitely feel for that situation. And I think that when it comes to, you know, Kenley and the bullpen, you know, the only way I could see him at this late in the off season, the only way I could see him getting traded before the season starts is if they actually make the move for Monty, and they want a clear salary, right? That's pretty much the only way I could see him coming on at this point. But I, you know, we'll be watching it pretty closely. I think we'll be able to have probably a little bit more in-depth conversations around projections next week. And as we start to move into a couple of shows a week. But I have a couple of different closing thoughts that are kind of like random comments.
Yes.
Jordan, do you have any closing thoughts before I kind of get into the ones that I have?
No, I just really do think that this middle relief battle is really going to be a tight squeeze.
Yeah. KB, closing thoughts?
I have zero closing thoughts. Take it away.
All right, so the first one I have is rest in peace to Stacey Wakefield. News came out, obviously, that she passed away, leaving their children now, you know, in the last couple of months, having to deal with the loss of both their parents. So we thoughts and prayers are with the Wakefield family at this time. And, you know, just incredibly sad. And I feel for their whole entire situation. And, you know, it's absolutely horrible. So that's the first thing that I wanted to make sure we mentioned. The second thing was it was announced today that Sam Kennedy was promoted to the CEO of Fenway Sports Group. So not only is he still going to be the CEO and what is the actual title? It's CEO and
chairman, I think.
Thank you. Yeah. I think that's right. Let me see. But anyways, either way, he's actually going to be still remaining as the CEO of the Red Sox, but he's going to be taking on additional responsibility.
He's the president and CEO.
Thank you. So he's taking over as president and CEO of Fenway Sports Group as well, which I thought was really interesting, especially since he was like one of the biggest advocates apparently for bringing Theo Epstein back. So he's moving into like a promotion, kind of handling more than just the Red Sox. Obviously, that means potentially a little bit more influence from him and Theo over not only the Red Sox, but also the entirety of Fenway Sports Group. I don't really know how much this changes on the day-to-day, but one can only hope that more connections to the Red Sox higher up in this business is better for the Red Sox. I don't know. Jordan, do you have any takes on that?
It's nothing really, because like you said, it's hard to tell how this changes on the day-to-day. It's just more opportunities for him to take heat from whatever ownership wants to throw him to the fire on. He's able to do now from a president and CEO standpoint of FSG and not just for the Red Sox.
KB, anything from you on that?
Absolutely nothing.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, we'll see what happens. we'll see what happens with Sam Kennedy, but that's one thing at least worth mentioning. The final thing is, you may have seen it on Twitter. It was getting some news this week, and that is what fans were screaming for last year. Probably the number one thing that even the casual fan knew that the Red Sox needed. Ownership wasn't lying when they said they were going to be improving the Fenway experience. And they said, like, forget the starting pitching. We know what you guys really have been asking for, and that's to improve the catch-up. And we know that the whatever organic ketchup brand that Fenway decided to use 2 years ago and switch to is the worst ketchup / watery marinara sauce known to mankind. So it's very exciting that they announced apparently, so they actually announced this back. It was like a one-off comment that was made at Winter Weekend to some season ticket holders at the National Basketball Hall of Fame. And Sam Kennedy was talking and doing a short Q&A with some people at the season ticket holders event there. And it wasn't reported anywhere. There wasn't any reporters at this event. And so it was just him talking to the season ticket holders. And I guess he said that they were going to be switching ketchup brands, switching to Heinz. I happened to be at Winter Weekend. And I overheard some people talking about this while I was there. And so we actually put out a podcast recapping Winter Weekend almost the day, I think it was the day after we got back. So it was like that Sunday or Monday. So we were the first people to actually put this news out into the world around the ketchup brand changing here at Fenway. And so I wanted to just play the little clip of us calling our shot on the podcast, because this is pretty exciting stuff. We were the first people to break ketchup live. So very excited for this. Let me see if the audio will work. I hope so. Let's see. Chrome has lost permission to share my screen.
Oh no,
that's not helpful.
That doesn't do us any good.
Stand by. Well, I guess we're not going to share my screen, but the link is on Twitter for the actual audio. Oh, that's such a disappointment. We straight up called it. We put it out there in the world. We released it. We were first on the beat, and it was. I even called the brand. I even said, sounds like they're going to be switching to Heinz. So. If you haven't listened to that episode, our Winter Weekend recap, it's like within the first 10 minutes. So go ahead and take a listen. Hear us call our shot. There's actually some pretty funny back and forth between Sam and Sammy from Playtesty and myself in regards to that being the one big off-season transaction is the catch up. But hey, we can only win small victories here and there. And now we know that at least the Fenway experience will be improved. So that's all I got.
Full throttle, they were talking about the catch up.
All along. Yeah. All along, at least when you're down, at least when the Red Sox are down 5-2 in the third inning of a Lucas Giolito start, you will be able to dip your French fries and your chicken tendies in some Heinz ketchup, as opposed to whatever low sugar garbage they were serving in years prior.
And honey mustard. They brought back honey mustard last year.
Honestly, debatably bigger than the ketchup, especially for the chicken tendies. It's
I'm a honey mustard truther.
Underrated dipping sauce, but I don't usually buy food there because it's usually I can either go to the game and like afford a ticket or I can buy food there. Like if somebody brings me, and I usually like to buy the ticket and like not feel like a mooch. So it's like, you know, food there is still ridiculously expensive, but at least the ketchup will be chef's kiss. We're chilling. We're there. Yes,
absolutely. No,
I will be there on opening day to report whether or not it is tasty or not.
Please. We're actually dying to know.
Yeah. Sorry. Somebody was yelling next to me. I had to mute myself for a sec. Any last thoughts on anything Red Sox related before we wrap this up as we're getting close to the hour and a half mark? All right.
Nothing.
So, that'll do it for this edition of the Pesky Report, episode 328, presented by Beyond the Monster. For KB and Matt, I'm Jordan. See you guys next time. We'll be with the Miners Show, actually. So that's the last thing I'll say before we wrap up. The Miners Show will be the next episode that you guys get. So that'll be.
Don't forget to follow us on Twitter if you haven't, at the Pesky Report. And if you haven't subscribed yet on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts, please do so. And we would love it if you'd leave a review or give us a 5-star rating. It certainly helps. And we appreciate that. Helps the algorithm and helps support the time and effort that we want to be able to put for you guys. And we appreciate every single person listening an hour and 22 minutes into this podcast. So we appreciate you very much. And if you're taking this much time, you might as well share it with your friends.
Yeah, exactly. You must be enjoying us at this point if you're still here. But yeah.
Please, before you leave a rating, keep in mind that my Bobby Dalbec DH comment was a joke. Please. Please do not blame me.
You can leave it 5 stars, but just make sure you trash on that take, please.
She's lying. She's dead serious.
Caitlin's never allowed back on the pod. Get her out.
She is fired. You just witnessed a firing live on the show.
Terrible offense.
Anyway, for KB and Matt, I'm Jordan. Catch you guys next time with the Miners Show, probably next Tuesday. Peace out, guys.